Okay, let's get going again. Commissioner Tilson, if you could come back. Senator Peterson, you were asking questions. Let me indicate to committee members, and we have some conference committees going on. The committee was in recess earlier, so quorum is still present. I just want to indicate for the folks who are here, the committee members who are here, and I'll indicate to others as they come in. I received some criticism on both sides of this thing for going a little bit too slowly on the vote. Let me make it very, very clear. If committee members, I don't care who they are, express a desire to vote on an issue, particularly a contentious issue, this particular chairman will hold the vote open. And if I know that somebody is missing or somebody has indicated that they are not going to be present, different story. But we have members scattered around the building. I don't know if there are people given our late hour or later hour who have left the building will determine that. If members are desirous of a vote, this chairman's going to hold the vote available for those members. So, Senator Peterson, you were in the process of had some questions to follow up with Commissioner Tilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yep, and one of the last questions we'd asked, and I think Senator Pappas had made the comment that the 500 additional cards that were required for organization is actually an additional requirement, and I believe that to be an advantage. And so I was hoping that Mr. Commissioner Tilson would comment on that. My understanding is that normally, when an organization is interested in entering into a collective bargaining agreement, that they need to show that there's 30% first under PELRA and under the National Labor Relations Act. They need to show that there's 30% first before they are able to get the lists that are public data. In this case, the way this bill is written, the collective bargaining unit is able to get the lists of the residents of Minnesota licensed in this area only with 500 cards, then go to the 30% requirement, then the 50% plus one. So am I interpreting that bill, the bill correctly?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Peterson, I hate to say it depends, but it does. The list of names are all public. Every public employee is public information. Certain kinds of information is private, certain is public. With respect to the family child care providers groups, all of their information is public. It's maintained on a public website by DHS. At least that's my information that I was given. With respect to the other group, the individual care providers, that's not the case, and I think that's the reason for this additional thing having been added. That's my understanding about it.
So Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, could I just clarify? So the 30% is still part of the law, that in order to call for an election, you have to have 30% of the group or the unit, the universe involved, to call for an election. The 500 is to get access to the list.
Mr. Chair and Senator Pappas, and to get the list, they can do that first by just getting the 500 cards. And that's a step right now that no other union can get. And we've heard testimony, quite frankly, some people believe that that's illegal or against the law based under PELRA and under the National Labor Relations Act that we've heard testimony for. So the steps are first, under this bill, first they get 500 cards, then they get the list, then they have to get the 30%, then they got to get 50 plus one to vote, right? And so Commissioner Tilson, under every other collective bargaining unit or election that you've held, no other union has been able to get the list with only having 500 cards. In this case, members, it's less than 1%. 500 is less than 1%. So you're really giving the information and helping somebody collectively build a list for a collective bargaining group, in my view. You're helping them get to the 30%.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, I think that's a little bit inaccurate. The only reason I think it's inaccurate is because the names are public. I mean, you're not talking about your average vanilla county bargaining unit, city bargaining unit, executive branch bargaining unit. The names are all public. And there's quite a bit of other information that's public, like where they work and what they do and how much they get paid and a lot of other information that they can get, as I understand it, without having to get anything from the BMS. What the BMS has the authority under Pelber to do is to compel the release of people's home addresses. And that's the piece, I think, that we're talking about here.
Okay. Mr. Chair and Commissioner, so in my view, is it a correct statement that you're the neutral party, you're the person that the residents of Minnesota rely on to facilitate this election? And so is it your opinion that this is not assisting an organizational group in developing the collective bargaining process?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator, I guess what I would say is that it's a statutory process that's proposed that permits them the opportunity to organize. If you want to call that assisting, I guess so. I mean, typically in today's world, once you have everybody's name and address and where they work, the rest of the stuff is not that, you know, difficult to obtain. So it may be of somewhat of an additional help to, you know, campaign in the beginning, because it's a huge group of people, and I would imagine contacting them is a big logistical job.
Okay. Mr. Chair, another question I had was relating to workers that specifically work part-time, I guess, or less than 14 hours in Pelra right now. Is it accurate that people that work less than 14 hours don't have to pay union dues?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, or Senator Peterson, excuse me, the answer to that is again, it depends. Peller says 14 hours a week or 35% of a normal work week, and there's a whole bunch of case law on what the statute means by that. And actually, there are lots of employees who are members of bargaining units and are covered by collective bargaining agreements who work significantly less than 14 hours a week, where they work in situations where the standard work week is 14 hours is 35% of 40. And when the law was written back in the 70s, that was kind of what they looked at as the cutoff between public employee status and non-public employee status, using that 35% cutoff. So where we have units of employees, examples, for example, in school districts and so forth, where there's employees that work significantly less than 40 hours a week, we apply a 35% standard to their normal work week. So 14 hours is the standard for full-time 40-hour-week employees.
So, Mr. Chair and Senator Pappas, your bill does not allow any exemption for that, is my understanding. Is that accurate? Or maybe, Commissioner, have you read it? This appears to be another exception or significant change to PELRA in that your bill doesn't have an exemption for people that are working under 14 hours a week.
Mr. Chairman, I don't think that's in my bill, and it's never come up before. It's the Finance Committee. It hasn't come up in any policy committees.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner, would you consider that a significant difference from every other collective bargaining group that you've been?
There is a provision in PELRA, as I said, that has a cutoff, and the cutoff is 35% of a normal work week. I wasn't involved in it, but I understand from what I've heard that the reason they put that section in there is because the normal work week in this group is pretty difficult to define.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Pearson. Yep.
Thank you. Then one other question I have for Senator Lori, relating back to the PCAs, relating to the self-directed and PCA programs. In your Health and Human Services bill, do you recall, apparently there's a provision right now or a bill that's moving forward that is changing that whole self-directed PCA program. Is that accurate? And would you be willing to describe that? If I realize I should have asked you about that beforehand, but I know you got a big bill there. But
Mr. Chair, Senator Peterson, yes, part of the governor's Reform 2020 package includes CFSS, which is Community First Services and Supports for People, and it's a more consumer-directed approach to try to keep individuals into the community. It includes significant reforms of the PCA program. It was looked at carefully so as to make sure that, you know, it was known that this bill was traveling, and and the two should work together, but also independently. So, I mean, we can pass this bill or not, and the CFSS is designed in a manner to accommodate either action by the legislature on this provision, if that's your question.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, I think what the question is that if Senator Lori bills passes as it is right now, there is a huge group of PCAs that will automatically, if his bill passes and this bill passes, there is a huge group of workers, half the PCAs right now, will automatically be put into this union without any choice, without any vote in it at all. And so, members, it's important to note that these two bills are tracking at the same time. And if that change happens in the HHS bill, Mr. Chair, I think Senator Lori's got a comment on that.
Certainly. Mr. Chair, Senator Peterson, that is not my understanding. Certainly, if the Reform 2020 package passes and if this bill both passes, the Bureau of Mediation Services would conduct an election based on the manner in which the law was structured at that time, and it would be incorporating everyone who was proposed to be in the union, and it would require a majority vote of those in the union at that time. So the election, my understanding is that the election would be conducted based on current law, whatever that current law is. So these proposals work either independently or separately together, and I don't believe that the assertions that Senator Peterson just made are true. I mean, it's the first that's been brought to my attention, and we certainly can double-check that, but that would be my understanding of how these two would interact with each other.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there any chance you'd have some staff available that would be willing to check on that right now? I mean, for me, it's important, I guess, to get that on the record, because that's what I believe right now, that basically over half of these 64,000 people are going to automatically be enrolled in the union if this bill passes and then the HHS bill passes. So I think that's a pretty important issue to try and confirm if possible.
Well, so, Mr. Chair, Senator Peterson, I can definitively say if this bill passes, nobody is put in a union prior to a vote. I mean, right there, your assertion is incorrect. I mean, there is no union created by the passage of this bill to represent either daycare workers or home care workers. This gives these workforces a chance to have a vote as to whether or not to organize with union representation. And so, I know on the face of it that your assertion is not true. I don't need staff to confirm that.
Great, thank you. So, members, there's really, right here we have two for sure. There's two major provisions that are significant changes from how the Commissioner Tilson has been asked to conduct elections in the past. One is to first turn over the lists after receiving just 500 cards, members, which is basically 1% of this workforce, far, far less than 30%, then move to the 30%, then move to the vote. That's one major change, and really the second major change from any other collective bargaining unit is that there's no exemption for workers that work less than 14 hours. Members, those are two significant changes and certainly offer preferential treatment to this specific process. And then finally, the last thing, the other issue I'd asked Senator Pappas about this morning, and I see it didn't get back in our information here, and I don't know if Senator Pappas saw it or not, but relating to, you had testified on several cases that there was 16 states that have passed this. In fact, even one of my constituents had referenced Ohio over and over and over again. In fact, Ohio is one of the states that has repealed this. So have you seen this, Senator Pappas, this packet right here? So I can get it over to you. But there's basically of the 16 states this document talks about 15 states. Seven states have actually repealed a law that was passed like this, and for whatever reason have decided to move away from it. So.
Mr. Chairman, I hadn't heard about Ohio, and that's sad.
Yeah. we have a page to get this document to Senator Pappas. She may want it for her file.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To that point, Commissioner and Senator Peterson had brought it up earlier, and now the information from Senator Anderson is in front of us again. And we can certainly differ on difference of opinion as to why things are repealed or whether it's a shame or not. But I'm wondering, Commissioner, if you, when reviewing these states that have repealed, have you come up with any, and maybe you haven't, I don't know if you have or not, but knowing that, that they have repealed these statutes, the prevailing reason why?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ingram, I really don't. I wasn't aware of the states that repealed. There's only a couple of states I've looked at very closely, mostly Washington State. So I can't. I'm just not knowledgeable enough to answer that.
And follow up. And thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think to Senator Pappas's credit, I think she said there were six, and now there being seven. Having said that, what's kind of catching to me over this, and I've been reading emails after emails, and I don't have to get into that. You're all getting them against this and very few for it. But I'm not seeing anything in some of those emails about their data being open to public. And I'm wondering how well they are informed of that once they do sign the 30 or whatever percent you went over with Senator Peterson here and you enroll in the union, that they know that their actual wage is going to be and all their contact information is going to be open to the public. Do you think that's a fair estimate that, or a fair assessment, I should say, that the daycare providers in the state of Minnesota are aware of that? I'm aware of that because I'm a former public employee. I am still a public employee, so all of my data is opened up. That brings them into a whole new area of public data opening up their private information. Do you think they're aware of that in general? Just kind of a general question.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to interrupt Senator Ingebrigtsen. The family daycare providers' data is already, current law, public.
So follow up, Mr. Chair. So their wage and all of that, their income and everything is public data now then. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not aware to what extent their data is public. I'm just aware that their name and their address is public. I don't know about other information about how much they charge or anything like that. I don't know.
And that was my question, Mr. Chair, and to the commissioner was, that is now, according to your testimony, going to be public data. Should they form a union? Should they?
Mr. Chairman,
should it be paid with public dollars, that
information? We're not making any changes in the family daycare providers in terms of their data. We're not making any changes to current law.
Mr. Chair? Mr.
Well,
Mr. Chair, just as a follow-up, I'm sorry to interrupt Senator Ingebrigtsen, but what about the PCAs if we're talking about data? I'd just like Senator Ingebrigtsen to ask about that, too. But the PCA information, is that public?
Mr. Chairman, under current law, they can get the names of the PCAs. This would also, with the 500 cards, give them access to home addresses, and that would be all.
So, Mr. Chair, I thought I heard earlier that if they're going to be union, I mean, we're opening the door to labor relations here, unionization of the daycare providers in the state. My simple question is, if somebody votes to form a union, and they're now going to be paid with public funds, is their income data public?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ingebrigtsen, I mean, if they're public employees, I guess they're going to be subject to the Data Practices Act. This has nothing to do with the question of whether they sign authorization cards or not. If they're public employees, now what the bill says, they're only public employees for the purposes of PELRA. That's what the bill says. I mean, you folks are writing the law here, so it says that they're only public employees just for the purpose of PELRA. So I think that I don't know, but I mean, it seems to me the way I read it, they're not going to be covered by the rest of the Data Practices Act, just like they're not going to be covered, for example, by the public pension law or some other laws that apply to public employees, because the law that you're considering here only makes them public employees for the purposes of PELRA. I mean, the names are going to be made available because the law says that.
And Mr. Chairman, the CCAP subsidy rates are public data. They're set by the legislature.
That part I understand, Mr. Chair. Thank you for indulging here. But when a union is formed and there's negotiations going on and there's a request to possibly even be part of a retirement system, I can see that happening down the line. Let's face it. I mean, many different organizations have formed unions over the years, both public and private, and they have gotten into the realm of retirement. I for one. And I'm assuming that my 34 years of public service as a law enforcement officer for a county entity, which is paid for by the taxpayer, was all public information. I mean, I know my local paper didn't have a problem putting my wage out there every year. Every year is accepted by the county board, and quite frankly, they could have everything. They could have my overtime data when I was a deputy. So that's not going to happen here if these unions were to receive state dollars.
Mr. Chairman, just to clarify, as the pension chair, when we formed the pension commission, we took away the ability of public unions to negotiate over pensions. That's not part of their ability to negotiate. That's decided by the pension commission upon recommendation to the legislature.
Well, has the legislature ever given pensions out to anybody other than labor unions? Public employees?
And judges.
They certainly don't do to private.
No, Mr. Chairman. But it's not negotiable. Pensions are not negotiable. They're determined by the legislature.
Further questions from the committee?
Subject to
Senator Westrom.
Subject of contract ratification.
Chair, back to some of the questions from this morning, some related to Senator Peterson. Senator Pappas, maybe I can just get this clearer in my head. Right, are these dual tracks, separate tracks for both the child care providers and the PCAs? And in my question, is it all one vote, or will the child care providers, those entities and small businesses be in one vote or group? And let's just say they wanted to go ahead because they had over 30% signing. And the PCAs didn't reach 30%. Is that how it goes ahead, or is it all or nothing with these two different groups we're talking about?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Westrum, they're separate votes.
Separate votes.
Separate processes.
And so, Senator Pappas, the child care we've heard, and the commissioner is under the impression it's 8,000 to 12,000. Is the PCA number, what's the number of the PCAs potentially affected, or is that 8 to 12 count both of them if they both were in the process?
Mr. Chairman, separate counts. The PCAs are from 12,000 to 15,000.
So, Senator Pappas, my understanding is at 500, if they find the first 500 signers, and assuming they get to that threshold, then they can come to the Department of Admin or DHS, whoever holds the license information, and then what is it that department or agency will make public for them that isn't public now?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Westrum, I don't think they make it public. They provide it to the, as I understand it, they provide it to the unions for the purposes of campaigning. I don't think it becomes public.
So, Mr. Chair, Commissioner, what is that information that's given to the unions and made a little public, then not a lot public unless somebody hands out the information? What is the information that they get after signing these 500 letters or cards? Because what we've just been talking about with Senator Ingebrigtsen and others is this information's public already. Why do we have to have this language in here that gives them special information after 500 cards are signed if it's already public?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, the answer to that question is, first of all, as Senator Pappas has said, the names of the names, addresses, I mean, the family child care names are already names, addresses, and that information that would otherwise be provided on the list that's provided for in the bill is available now. The for the PCAs, for the folks that are providing individual home care, it's names and addresses, is my understanding. I don't think there's anything else, as far as I know. That's my understanding about it. And that's what we need to conduct the election, because I need an address to mail the ballots to.
Mr. Chairman and Commissioner, so for the PCAs, the name and address is not public right now?
Mr. Chairman, you can get the names currently, but the addresses, the home addresses, are not currently public data.
So, Mr. Chair, Senator Pappas, and I guess Commissioner, back to the child care. So you're saying every child care entity that fills out a license with the state, that information, their name, their business, their address, location, is already public? If that's the case, why do we have to have language that gives explicit authority to give this information out if they get 500 signatures?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, I think the reason is they made the two laws uniform. Also, the actual preparation of the list itself involves some gathering of data and putting together in a certain format, and I think the drafters of the bill wanted to make sure it was done uniformly. I think that's why they did it that way. But I know from past, you know, conversations with DHS that they have this information. It may be that the format in which it has to be prepared in order to be used for an election might be what's involved with this. I'm not absolutely sure about the answer to that.
Mr. Chairman, that's Senator correct. Pappas. But in addition, the unions wanted to prove to the legislators that they really were going to make an effort and were going to have sincere interest in moving ahead with forming a union. So the 500 is the extra step to show, yes, there is interest, and now we'll get the larger list, and from the larger list we'll reach the 30% threshold possibly, and then it will call for an election.
And so
the extra hoop to
Senator. That's what would raise quite a bit of suspicion. If they can already get this information, how can it be an extra hoop? And why do we have to carry this language along if there's not something that there must be something that they can't get that we're facilitating to help make this an easier process for them?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Westrum.
Senator Pappas.
Exactly what I've said already, what Mr. Tilson said already, is that we made both articles of the bill uniform. The purpose of the 500 is more important for the PCAs because they can only get access now through the Freedom of Information Act to the names. This would allow them, with 500 cards, to get access to the addresses. So they still have to find 500 people searching for their home addresses to find them before they actually get the home addresses of the entire universe, which we said was 12 to 15,000.
So, Mr. Chairman, thank you, Senator Pappas. The PCA is what I was going to ask next.
That was the PCA I was talking about.
You clarified some of that.
Thank you.
So how do they find the 500 to begin with? Do they get preliminary information? Do they just go knock on doors down the street and hope they come across a PCA?
Mr. Westrum, I have someone from the union sitting next to me, and he'll introduce himself and answer your question.
Very good. Thank you.
If you could identify yourself, please.
Mr. Chair and Senator Westrum, my name is Philip Cryan with SEIU Healthcare Minnesota. For years, we have received phone calls and other contact from personal care attendants and other people doing home care work. Through the Freedom of Information Act, as well as Senator Pappas indicated, have been able to get lists of the names of other home care workers. So we've talked to well in excess of 500 workers who are, you know, interested in moving this effort forward.
So, Mr. Chair, I forgot your last name.
Cryan.
Bryant?
Cryan.
Cryan. Mr. Cryan, so basically you've got 500, but if we put 1,500 in there, that would be a problem, or some other number. And if you didn't have access to this, it would make it harder to gather the 30% petition. Is that right?
Mr. Chair and Senator Westrom, we want to make sure that access to this additional information, the addresses, which is not currently available to the broader public, is only available to organizations that have, you know, have the support of a large number of workers who are interested in proceeding with the process of pursuing whether they want to have a vote to form a union.
But, Mr. Cryan, what you're telling me is it would make it easier for you to get to your 30% threshold, right?
Mr. Chair and Senator Westrom, as Commissioner Tilson indicated, for the child care workers in Minnesota, as well as many other public employees, the information that we're talking about getting access to through this list of 500 people is information that is already public for other public employees.
Why do you need it then?
Well, Mr. Chair, it seems like you're dancing around answering my question, and so I guess we're going to have to just keep drilling until I either get an answer that makes sense or I find out why you don't want to answer my question. Will it make it easier, Mr. Cryan, to organize if you get this information with names and addresses and homes of the workers? It seems like it would.
Mr. Chair and Senator Westrom, any smaller number would make that easier and any higher number would make that harder.
Explain
Senator,
your answer.
Senator Westrom, yes.
Senator Pappas.
Obviously, if you get addresses, it makes it easier to organize.
That is right. Mr. Cryan, do you agree? He doesn't agree with
Mr. Senator. Chair and Senator Westrom, yes.
Okay. So, Mr. Chair and Senator Pappas, we've now got people that have filled out information for the purposes of doing their job. You say the child care businesses already have all public information. I would like, if somebody's here that could either clarify that or contradict that or tell us more clearly what is and what isn't, I would welcome that testimony. But follow me on this. You've got these small businesses just interested in taking care of children, helping out families that need child care. You've got individuals looking for jobs, families looking for help with a disabled child. They fill out a form for the government. Nowhere on that form does it say this license or this information you're filling out is something that the government down the road may decide to just give to somebody to start knocking on your door and selling you something or promoting something that you don't want. It seems a bit unfair to me that the government would go down the road of asking for this information and then years or decades later change and start making this information public or available to a group to come around and try to promote or push something on them.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator.
With all due respect to Senator Westrom and members of the committee, this bill was heard by the Judiciary Committee, which discussed any data privacy issues, was heard by state and local government, probably was heard by five other committees. I can't recall now. This is the Finance Committee, and I know the chairman has often granted committee members great latitude, so I feel like I may be stepping out of place here to remind members that this is the Finance Committee.
Senator Pampas, that's well taken. You've reminded committee members of what a really nice guy I am, but that's
roll call.
Let's do it.
But Senator Pampas's point is well taken. That we want to.
It's well taken.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
But let's remember that this is the Finance Committee. And I do think it's obviously in the committee we can ask questions that might get a little bit of field. But let's try to keep it within reason and make sure members understand what's in the bill. But as Senator Pappas points out, we heard it in several other committees, and we've had a chance for an exposition of a lot of the issues. So let's.
Mr. Chair.
So, Senator Westerman, I'm not going to cut you off, but let's.
I'll conclude as rapidly as possible. So, Senator Pappas, the concern and what I'm hearing is we are going to change the bar of what many of these people, if not all of them, may have anticipated or expected. It does raise concern for the state and trust that people might give us. I mean, we've got all kinds of discussions about registering guns, registering businesses, registering everything, that automobiles, and people like private lives, not having the government take their information. Tax information is very, very sacred for most people. And when they fill out a government form, they hope and believe, at least my constituents largely do, that many are reluctant to fill it out, but they fill it out trusting the government is only using it for the purpose of what they really say they need to use it for, which is to have a list of child care providers so they know who to send payments to or who the PCAs are. And so I have concern with this as we sit and dig about this 500. And last question, and maybe somebody in the audience, I've heard statements that this is different and potentially contrary to PELRA law. If there's anybody here that has that information that can shed any more light on it, I would welcome that information either by note or by somebody coming to the testifier table. We had a testifier here yesterday that, or what day was it? Whatever day, a couple days ago, that said he's counseled the legislature before that things are going to be struck down in court. They went ahead and did it and then had to be struck down. I'm wondering if this is a provision that could be up for a challenge, Senator Pappas. What do you know?
Mr. Chairman, the experience in other states courts have not struck down any of the laws in other states. They've been, the right to organize has been taken away by the legislature, even if it was granted, as Senator Peterson mentioned earlier.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman. Further questions? Senator Limmer.
Mr. Chairman, I sit on the Judiciary Committee, and one question that we didn't ask, and I don't know if this is an issue or not, whenever the government wants data from an individual, we have to satisfy what they call a Tennyson warning. And a Tennyson warning probably was enacted when PCAs and child care officials or business owners filled out information for their license. And it was to keep track of addresses, perhaps for tax purposes. But the purpose of a Tennyson warning is the purpose must be stated in the intended use of the data. We're changing the intended use of the original data by passing this law. So I'm not sure if a Tennyson warning is being negated here or not. This, I don't know if, since the government already controls the data, they collected it, but under a different intention and purpose. Now it'll be used for a dissemination to a union. I'm not quite sure if I think it might even violate the original purpose of a Tennyson warning by including it now without going back to the subject of the data.
Mr. Chairman, just briefly, the proposed legislation is making the PCAs public employees, and under existing law, that data of their name and their address is public data. As we mentioned, for child care workers, there's no change.
But Mr. Chair, Senator Pappas, they aren't public employees now. As non-public employees, they registered certain information that was required of them from the state government as private business owners. if this passes, we're going to be changing them into some status referred to as public employees. So I don't know if I sense that there might be a conflict in law regarding the original Tennyson warning and the purposes that the state said it was going to be used for.
Senator Limmer, is that directed toward?
Well, maybe perhaps one of his senator's testifiers might be able to.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know that anyone here is an expert on Tennyson warning, whatever that is. I'd have to ask Senator Latz, maybe.
Well, Senator Tennyson is not here.
Or ask Mr. Tennyson. Right?
The only senator I'm aware of who's had a law named after him, but.
Isn't there a Mr.
I don't think we have a data privacy expert here, Senator Limmer, so I don't know where we're going to get an answer to that. I think Senator Engelbrecht.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would think the union representative would know about the Tennyson warning.
I don't, Mr. Correa?
Mr. Chair and Senator Ingebrigtsen, I've never heard of the Tennyson warning before 5 minutes ago. Thank you.
Yeah, you're lucky. is there any, Sir Nino?
Well, Mr. Chair, along that line, I understand that the law would be defining them as public employees, but in the context of the concerns with the Tennyson notification, there's no delayed implementation in this bill, which would give a family care provider, is that the term we're creating for them now, that would give them time to opt out of receiving the public subsidies. We're going to automatically, as soon as this becomes enacted, make them public employees without there's no notice in here. We're not sending them a card that says effective July 1st or whatever the effective date is, you are now going to be a public employee, and here's how this your data is going to become public data. They will not be voluntarily opting into employment. We'll just be making them employees.
Mr. Chairman, let me say again, for the family daycare providers, the data is already public.
Sorry, PCAs. PCAs okay. is my concern. I'm not a lawyer, but that seems on its face to be problematic, that we've given them a notification that this is how your data is going to be used. And now we're unilaterally changing their classification without an option for them to opt out of that. So they were told this is how your data is going to be used, but now we're going to use it in a different way without their notification and any ability on their part to know that they need to do something affirmatively to get out of that. That does seem very, very problematic, even to a non-lawyer.
Senator Pappas, do you? If not, Senator Peterson, did you?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'm interested in an answer for Senator Nino as well, but do we have that or we don't?
I'm not sure. I'm seeing somebody with the answer. I don't think we have the appropriate Senate counsel available to us. So is there another line of questioning? If not, is there further?
No, Mr. Chair. Is Senator Nino, are you finished? Or?
Well, I guess my question is, Senator Nino is trying to send me a message.
I was going to suggest on regarding the, Mr. Chairman, regarding the Tennyson notice, perhaps Mr. Potter knows or could look it up. Nino and Senator Limmer are correct. There is a Tennyson notice.
Mr. Bodden,
I just don't remember the specifics of it.
Mr. Bodden, I don't think you've been counseled to the Data Privacy Subcommittee or the Judiciary Committee, but if you think you want to take a stab at it.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not going to claim any data practices expertise. I can tell you, I can sum up for you what Section 13.04 says, which contains the Tennyson warning. And it says that an individual asked to supply private or confidential data concerning the individual shall be informed of the purpose and intended use of the requested data within the collecting government entity, and whether the individual may refuse or is legally required to supply the requested data, and the individual should be informed whether there's any known consequence arising from supplying or refusing to supply private or confidential data, and the identity of other persons or entities authorized by state or federal law to receive the data. That's about the best I can do to sum it up for you.
Mr. Chairman, We don't have any objection to providing the warning that was similar to what Senator Rosen had offered in a previous committee. It's just when we got the fiscal note and we were told we had to slim down the bill that we deleted that notification section because of the $148,000 cost.
Senator Westrum.
Mr. Chair, appropriately, we're in front of the Finance Committee. We've had discussion with a little extra money on the bottom line. I think $148,000 is pretty minor compared to this issue, but in the context of what's on the bottom line. So I'm wondering if you might be open or amenable to an amendment in that we could fund that $148,000.
Well, Senator Westrum, obviously it would be an order to offer amendments. I can't suggest what I would do or not do, but if you wanted to make such a motion, that would be an order.
Well, Mr. Chair, I or somebody might be inclined to, but I know you wield a very big stick, and
not from what I heard earlier on the floor tonight. But
if you were amenable to that 148, I would guess there might be several members on this committee, both DFL and Republican, that think that would be a valuable thing to pay for rather than to take it out.
Well, Senator Westrum, if you wish to offer an appropriate motion or amendment, you can do so. If you're making the motion, I would ask Mr. Nauman for a comment on any fiscal implications of the motion. But
Mr. Chair, maybe Mr. Bodern, while discussion is going on, I would ask him to make me an oral amendment that would fit. And sounds like Senator Rosen's had a similar language, and we can go on if we can just come back to that matter.
Is there Senator Newman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've just been informed that there's an A-122 amendment that would address Senator Westrum's issue, I would move that amendment.
All right. Senator Newman has moved the A-22 amendment. It's
122, I think.
I'm sorry, 122, is that correct? Mr. Bodden probably knows what you're referring to.
I hope so.
Mr. Chairman, I have a copy of that, and I think Senator Newman may be correct. If he's okay with it, I'll distribute it to the committee.
Please.
Okay, if we could have the amendment distributed. So, Senator Newman, are you offering this amendment?
Or Senator West? I am offering it. I'd like to see it, though. Okay.
By all means.
One moment, please.
You want to read your amendment?
I do. I would offer.
All right, Senator Newman is offering the 122 amendment. Senator Newman, I understand what somebody obviously had this drafted, so I don't know if somebody else wants to volunteer, but Senator Newman, you're moving the amendment.
And I am, Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate your patience. When Mr. Bodern read the Tennyson warning, it seemed to me that, and it's been really a long time since I've seen that, but it seemed to me that part of it was talking about new or different consequences or use of the data. And it just seems to me that Senator Westrum and Senator Limmer and Senator Nino are onto something here, that if this data that has been previously collected is going to be used for a different purpose than originally submitted, then I think those folks should have notice of that fact beforehand. And I believe the A-122 amendment addresses that issue.
Senator Pappas.
Mr. Tilson wrote the fiscal note, if we're asking about the cost. I was trying to find my fiscal note, so I wasn't following the conversation.
Well, Mr. Nauman.
So
So, Mr. Chairman, members, if I could call your attention to the tracking that we had put together, the spreadsheet. I think members probably have that in front of them, searching for mine. I'm regretting not putting line numbers on this spreadsheet, but the one that's listed under Article 1 and 2, postage, mailing, notice, programming, and design, the reduction of from 207,000 down to 59,000 in the, I believe it was the A91 amendment that the author put on the bill, removed 148,000. It did so by striking this language. So I believe that reinstatement of this language would generate $148,000 of cost.
Okay. Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, as I said, I don't have any problem with that. We don't have any problem with that. We took it out to cut down the cost of the bill. And so it's a problem with the chairman and the chairman's budget that he's set aside for this bill, which he asked me to slim down. So I took that out for that reason.
Well, and we had some extensive discussion on the floor earlier this evening. There would be, and we haven't, and we've had such discussion in this committee, it would be within monies available to this committee.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would support it if the chairman wanted to put the money into it, and I would oppose it if the chairman doesn't want to put the money into it.
Well, Senator Pappas, my response is the money would be available. It would be up to the committee.
Yeah,
we could book the dollar figure as indicated by Mr. Nauman. So we have Senator Newman's motion in front of us. The money would be available. Is there further discussion on Senator Newman's motion?
Mr. Chairman.
I'm sorry. Senator Wheat.
Yes, sir. Mr. Chairman, at line 1.5, after notice, I would move to insert a comma and add, call the Newman notice.
I don't.
I would oppose that amendment.
I'm sorry, you would oppose.
It'd make you famous. Good.
All right, Senator Newman does not accept that as an amendment.
Mr. Chairman,
to his amendment.
Can we put Thomasoni in there?
Sure. Yeah.
Tell you what, if people would like to do that, we'll have a day of hearings on when we can all name an amendment or a bill after ourselves. But otherwise, we have Senator Newman's motion in front of us. Is there further discussion on the motion? Senator Nino.
Mr. Chair, Senator Goodwin was just commenting something to me that I noticed. And this the language in the amendment, as I understand it, would actually be a notification after the fact. So I don't know that it's getting to the intent of what Senator Newman was talking about, doing a prospective notification.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Sieben.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, for recognizing me, I was going to say that I am opposed to this amendment because whether or not the person receives notice that their information was provided to the organization is inconsequential because in the legislation, if passed, the information is already released. There's nothing that the person can do to contact the Commissioner of Human Services to say, I don't want my information released, for example. So I think this would equate to a big waste of money if we pass this amendment. Send out a notice saying that your public address or your address is was made public or was given to the one of the employee organizations. It doesn't matter. And as you said, Senator Pappas, for the daycare providers, this information is already public. And for the home care providers, it's only their address that's being made public. And by the time they get this notice, they probably already have been contacted by the union. So
extra bureaucracy.
It just seems like exactly additional bureaucracy that is not needed.
Senator Goodwin.
Oh, well, Mr. Chair, I'm just thinking that if we're going to do this, then we should do it prior to the
information being sent out. So I agree with Senator Steven that the daycare providers it's not necessary, so you could take out 1.3 to 1.7. And, well, no, I'm sorry. This applies to both. I guess this amendment applies to both groups. So I guess it should be drafted just to the PCAs, and it should be drafted to will be provided, because I don't know if that cuts down the cost at all or not, if that's what you had before, Senator Pappas. But if it did cut down the cost, that would be even better, if that information on daycare providers is already public anyway.
So, Senator Goodwin, are you moving to amend?
Well, I want to ask Senator Pappas if that's what she intends, to just send out notices to the ones that wouldn't ordinarily have that information out there.
Senator Pappas?
I was just consulting with Mr. Tilson, and that would probably take about a third of the fiscal note to not do it, not have the Commissioner of Human Services send to the daycare providers. But I think in the end, I think Senator Steben makes the most compelling case that it's just – I think it's a waste of money.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Lemmer.
Mr. Chair, reading from the Information Policy Analyst Division, Department of Administration, there's a statement about the Tennyson warning. Kind of fits this situation. After giving a Tennyson warning notice and collecting data from an individual, a government entity may wish to use the data differently than it described, or may wish to release the data to a different entity or person other than it described in the notice. In either of these situations, the government entity would need to obtain informed consent from the data subject.
Exactly.
So if you're using this information for a different purpose than it was originally collected, as is the case of this legislation, you would have to get informed consent from that subject.
Then we have Senator Newman's motion in front of us. Is there further discussion? Senator Westrom?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think to Senator Goodwin's issue, I think there's kind of a two-track issue here. One is the information they're going to currently use, and we're going to authorize releasing in this bill, is information that people have assumedly received their Tennyson warning on another document that the government collected for another purpose. It seems to me that they couldn't be using that information or shouldn't be using that information for the purpose that we're contemplating here tonight. The notice, as I understand this amendment, would at least have this notice on these documents as well, so people would understand that they're being given this notice for this purpose, in accordance with the Tennyson warning. That's my understanding of this. Senator Goodwin might have further thought, or other members, but I, as we dissect this, I think there's kind of two issues, and we're trying to fix a part of one part of them, not the other part.
Mr. Chair, I might just make a suggestion to deal with the issue between before or after, and I'm not necessarily offering the amendment at this point, just making the suggestion and see what Senator Newman and Senator Goodwin think. But on line 1-6, change was to will be, and on line 1-7, was to will be, so that it would read the person that will be provided about the person that will be provided to the organization and shall identify the organization to which the information will be provided. And then the same was to will be on lines 11 and 12. So then it would be beforehand. So if Senator Newman wants me to, I would certainly offer that amendment to the amendment, or he can put it on.
Senator Newman?
That makes sense to me. I mean, obviously what we're trying to do is provide the warning before this list is sent out to the unions, and I really believe that on the basis of what Mr. Bodern read and what Senator Limmer read, if we don't do something like that, you're clearly going to be in violation of the Tennyson warning. So I would accept Senator Fischbach's as a friendly amendment to the amendment, or we could incorporate it however we want to do.
Okay, well, it's your amendment. If you want to accept language, what language then are you suggesting?
Mr. Bodner could maybe help me, Mr. Chairman, but what I would suggest on line 1.6, strike the word was and put in will be. Line 1.11, strike the word was and put in what will be. And I think then we are doing it ahead of time.
Mr. Chairman? Okay.
Senator Pappas.
Just in the interest of moving things along, I think that the committee makes, and Senator Newman makes a really good point for 1.8 to 1.12, and I would support that. And if the committee wants to do the first part of it, they certainly can, but that information is already available on the Internet. So to tell people that their information is going to be made public when it's already public, it seems a little silly.
Senator Newman.
Senator Pappas, I think the difference is that here you have the government entity providing the list as opposed to going and looking it up on the Internet. So I see that as a difference. And I also see just a danger for the state of Minnesota if we have a law called the Tennyson Warning in place, and it seems to me that this bill bypasses that, and I don't think that's a real good idea. I think we should pay attention.
All right. We have Senator Newman's motion in front of us. He has amended his amendment, so I think we have that language. Is there further discussion on Senator Newman's motion? Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair, well, Senator Limmer then read the complete passage that did include the informed consent part, and so I'm wondering, I'm sitting at a table with all these lawyers, and I haven't heard what an interpretation of that part of what he read and how it affects what we have before us. So I don't know if counsel would like to address that. What's your interpretation, Mr. Bodern, of that informed consent part of the Tennyson Warning looking at this amendment?
Mr. Bodern, if you have a response.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Bonoff, it's I don't know that the language you see in the A-122 amendment would necessarily accomplish all the steps that are listed in the Tennyson Warning. In particular, I think the Tennyson Warning refers to informing the individual whether or not they can refuse to supply the data, and there are several other provisions. The identity of other persons or entities is who are authorized to receive the data is certainly addressed. It may be a little difficult to convert this into a Tennyson Warning.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Goodwin.
I'm not even sure we need this, particularly because if they weren't given a Tennyson Warning in the beginning when they registered as a PCA or whatever they had to do to get payment from the state, then they would probably just fall under that this is public information. If nothing prevents this from being public information, it should be public information because they're getting paid by the state. Just like a contractor that gets paid by the state. That's public information. So I'm not sure that this is even needed, and that's why I'm thinking this discussion should be something that's saved for later, because we should find out from the Department of Human Services first what exactly was told to people that are signing up as PCAs.
Senator Newman.
I would respectfully disagree with Senator Goodwin simply because this is a newer, different use of the information.
All right. We have Senator Newman's motion in front of us.
Oh, Mr. Chair, I did have a comment. I just was deferring. The PCAs, not the daycare providers, but the PCAs, presumably we complied with the law, and they were given a Tennyson warning disclosure. And this would be a new use, and based on what Senator Limmer read, there would be a requirement for informed consent. This amendment does the informing part, but it does nothing for consent, as the lawyer over there knows and is smiling. I would suggest maybe, Senator Newman, this isn't going to fix it. It's probably going to cost a lot more than that fiscal note of $148,000 to get informed consent. And that's probably something that the finance chair and the bill author and some lawyers need to figure out, and it might make sense, Senator Newman, just to withdraw this amendment, and if this bill does indeed come up on the floor, make sure that that is figured out by the time it gets there. But if you're going to get informed consent for 10 or 15,000 people, that's going to cost you more than $148,000.
We have Senator Newman's motion in front of us. Senator Westrom.
Procedure question, Mr. Chair. What is the official status of this bill in front of us that we would be amending? Have we reconsidered the bill that failed on a tie the other day, or what is the parliamentary procedure that we're amending?
Senator Westrom, you and I talked about that earlier today, and I said I would just verify where we were. I believe in talking to Senator Pappas, she intends to make a motion that the bill, I'm not sure the exact word in the motion, but I believe she's going to make a motion to recommend that the bill be passed without recommendation. It's, I've consulted with Mr. Bodden. That's a new motion. That's not the motion that failed. So as a consequence, there would not be the need for a motion to reconsider because it's a totally separate motion. And so the bill's in front of the committee again, and Senator Pappas could make that motion without the need for any reconsideration. Mr. Bodden, I don't know if I stated that correctly.
Mr. Chairman, I think that's accurate.
So, Mr. Chairman, my familiarity with parliamentary procedure is, though, that we need a main motion in front of us before we can start amending something. And that might be the motion that Senator Pappas intends to make, but Mr. Bodden can maybe offer me clarification. Do we allow under Mason's amending something that's not in front of us? It seems to me we usually have to make a motion to move a bill somewhere and for consideration, and then we start amending it. Just a parliamentary question.
Senator Westrom, I'll let Mr. Bodden verify if what I'm going to suggest is correct, but we have the bill in front of us as we have any other bill on the agenda, and we debate a bill, we take amendments to the bill, and quite often the author does not make the motion to pass in one form or another until the discussion is completed. So I don't think we need to do that, but certainly Senator Pappas could make the motion. Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, it's just a different procedure than what the House does, Senator Westrom.
Okay.
The House generally will make the motion first.
So Mr. Bodden, is that consistent with Mason's? Is that where we get our guidance from?
Mr. Bodden.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Westrom, I think it is consistent with Senate custom and practice, which would govern. And basically that's the essence of what I think Senator Cohen is saying, is that often the main motion does not occur until the bill has been debated and amended in Senate committees. Certainly it's different when bills are taken up on the Senate floor, but it's how things have been customarily handled in the Senate. The motion would not be out of order, certainly, at this time.
Mr. Chair.
But at this point, we have Senator Newman's motion in front of us. Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chair, I think what the answer is it's Mr. Bodden is correct. It's custom and usage. I think it's just sloppy is the way we do it. We custom and usage, and we've just accepted it. But technically, yes, Senator Westrom is correct. The motion should be made. We should debate it and do whatever we do, amend it, and then renew the motion.
Well,
just sloppy.
Okay. There was a reference, again, earlier this evening to the years I've spent in the Senate. I've never known that we've done it to the contrary.
And Mr. Chair, and that's and that's custom and usage, but if you'd like me to, I have my Masons with me. I could.
Sir Fischbach.
Mr. Chair, we just make the motion?
Yeah,
what's
I was
the problem?
Say,
right. No, and Mr. Chair, I was exactly only offering it as explanation because it's correct.
Senator Pappas, before we get into an obscure discussion
please
of Masons and maybe go back to, you know, to earlier centuries, do you want to make a motion on the bill?
Mr. Chairman, I would move that
Senator Newman, would you be willing to withdraw your motion to allow Senator Pappas to make her motion, and then we'll get right back to your motion?
Well,
We're going to screw up custom and usage
indeed,
here. Okay, Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that Senate File 778 as amended be sent to the Senate floor without recommendation.
All right. In fact, you know what? I'm going to, just to make sure we're doing it correctly.
I think maybe it should be passed without recommendation.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Pappas, what I might suggest would be reported to the Senate without recommendation.
Report.
All right. So we have Senator Pappas' motion in front of us. Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move the 8122 amendment as amended.
Don't we have to vote on our motion first?
No. I hope not.
Okay, well, we will. Sorry.
Eventually.
Tired.
Okay.
I believe my motion at this point would be in order, Mr. Chairman. Is that correct?
That is correct.
I'm not trying to be
difficult. No, it would be in order to amend the bill. So
my motion is on the A-122 amendment as I have previously amended it.
All right. So we have Senator Newman's motion in front of us. Senator Westrom.
Mr. Chair, just while we're mired in the mud here a little bit and nothing else that gives me some clarity moving forward for my tenure in the Senate. if a bill, and Mr. Bodden maybe has a better explanation of this, if you don't, Mr. Chair, if a bill 2 days ago was in front of our committee, a motion was made, and it failed, generally reconsidering is the motion to bring that bill back to life. But is it established and proper that we just rather make a different motion and play this out? Could we just keep making a different motion of any bill that comes in front of a committee and hopefully some people don't show up someday and it could change the outcome of that bill, bill's vote without reconsidering it? Is that what we can also do?
Well, Senator Westrom, I think we've answered the question, but Mr. Bodden?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Westrom. As Senator Cohen said, Senator Pappas's motion is a different motion. I think the distinction to deal with the problem that you're concerned with is there could have been a motion to postpone the bill indefinitely. At that point, any other motion other than a motion to reconsider would be out of order. That would be the way to prevent, I think, what you're describing, which is the possibility of a number of different motions to deal with the bill.
But that wasn't done. Okay. Senator Peterson?
Very good. Thank you.
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
On Senator Newman's motion.
I have a question on Senator Pappas' testimony earlier relating to PCAs, so I'll wait.
All right, we have Senator Newman's motion in front of us. Is there any further discussion on Senator Newman's motion? Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Bodden, this is the information, at least the best of your knowledge in reading the Tennyson warning, this is going to answer or at least come close to being the same as the Tennyson warning? Is that your opinion?
Mr. Bodden.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Ingebrigtsen, I'm struggling a little with the Tennyson warning because, as I said earlier, I'm not a data practices expert. The Tennyson warning applies when an individual is asked to supply private or confidential data concerning the individual. And I guess there might be some threshold questions there. Once that applies, then there are basically four different requirements. The individual must be informed of the purpose and intended use of the data by the government entity, whether the individual can refuse or is legally required to supply the data, and whether there's any known consequence arising from supplying or refusing to supply the data, and the identity of other persons or entities who may see the data. So those are four basic elements. I think I'll leave it to your judgment to determine whether what you see in front of you in the A-122 amendment complies.
Mr. Chairman, could Mr. Tilson comment in terms of public employees?
Commissioner Tilson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the only thing I commented to Senator Pappas is that PELRA provides for the release of public employees' information under the election processes. I don't have the copy of the statute in front of me, and I should probably have it memorized, but I know that one of the things that PELRA that the Data Practices Act empowers the Bureau to do is to release otherwise private information about public employees to the unions for the purposes of that you're proposing releasing for here. That's all.
All right. Sir Newman, on your motion.
I guess I would respectfully disagree with the commissioner to this extent that but for this bill, the individuals we're talking about are not public employees.
All right, we have Senator Newman's motion in front of us. Is there further discussion, Senator Ingebrigtsen?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I was not done yet. I apologize for not waving my hand here with regards to Mr. Bodden's statement. The Tennyson warning was issued several times in questioning public employees, and I think that's very clear by reading the Tennyson warning. And I don't know, maybe Senator Latz can comment on this, but I know it's used before the investigation or during the investigation of wrongdoings of for sure, police officers in the past. And I have had some experience in doing that. I was just racking my mind as to why that was done. Well, now it's very clear when it's been repeated to me twice why we did that. They have to be informed that information can actually be used if they give the false information, and I quite frankly think this has nothing. This amendment has nothing to do with that. So I think I don't agree with two senators in the corner over there that this is just absolutely not really addressing that. And I think it's bureaucracy growing, and I don't think it's going to provide the information that I think Senator Newman's after. But if you're talking about Tennyson warning, I don't think it has anything to do with it.
Okay. We have Senator Newman's motion in front of us. If there's no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion fails. Further discussion on the bill. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Pappas. Earlier, when you were responding to Senator Westrom about the PCA counts, I was going through the fiscal note here, and it appears to be significantly different than in terms of the numbers that you stated to us. Do you recall, in terms of the estimated numbers of PCAs or individuals that would be affected by this or Article 2 in the bill? I think that's what we were talking about at the time. Is that like 15 or 16,000 you mentioned, or?
Senator Pappas?
I had mentioned that we estimated 12,000 to 15,000, and you're saying the fiscal note indicates growth in that?
Well, no, it's quite different. Actually, if members want to turn to page 13, right in the middle of that page, again, there isn't line numbers. This is the fiscal note that I think the Bureau of Mediation Services put together. On page 13, right in the middle, it says that paragraph starts with the word the. It says the total of individual providers that may be covered by the agreement is unknown. The exclusive representatives is also unknown. And an estimated from DHS is that approximately 55,000 to 60,000 individuals would be covered by Article 2, which Article 2 is the one that relates to the PCAs. So it's basically...
Senator Pappas?
Mr. Chairman, I think Mr. Cryan will break that down and explain it to us.
Mr. Chair and Senator Peterson, there are different covered programs named in this bill. One of those is the Consumer Directed Community Supports Waivers that you've heard testimony on. The Department of Human Services doesn't currently collect information on the individual providers in the language of this bill. Within that program, so we don't have any basis to make an estimate. And my understanding from conversations with DHS is that they are also making an estimate there rather than reporting a number. And then in the PCA program, the Freedom of Information Act request on the PCA program does show a number very close to what you just read out of the fiscal note. Our understanding is that includes all PCAs enrolled in the PCA program. That would be both those who are directly employed by agencies and those in self-directed programs.
Okay.
Senator Peterson?
Thank you to that point. Actually, I wrote that down somewhere when Senator Lurie was talking about, what does that acronym stand for again? That's C.
Who is the question CC, directed to?
Mr. Chair and Senator Peterson, the Consumer Directed Community Supports Waivers.
So are you aware of the bill that's moving in, the HHS bill relating to those PCAs?
Mr. Chair and Senator Peterson, Senator Laurie was referring earlier to the Community First Services and Supports Program that bill creates, which is different from the waivers I just mentioned.
Thank you.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was getting my acronyms mixed up there. So. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chairman, I'd renew my motion.
All right. All those in favor?
Mr. Chairman.
You tried. Mr. Chair, you tried.
I was ready to hit the gavel right there.
I think it was Senator Westrom, Senator.
All right.
We have to get.
So I hope we're kind of winding up the debate, but Senator Westrom.
Mr. Chair, first of all, is there a roll call on the final on this motion?
You can request one if you'd like to.
I'd ask for one, and then second clarification of the motion, and then I'd just like to talk a little bit to what the motion really is. If you could clarify, restate what the motion is that we're doing.
Mr. Bowden, what is the motion?
Mr. Chairman, I think what I recommended was, after listening to Senator Pappas describe her motion, the committee would report Senate File 778 without recommendation.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I assume we're in final arguments.
Third reading. I'll accept
well,
that.
Mr. Chair,
final argument, Senator Westrom.
Here's my issue, members. I think there's a lot of trouble with this. I don't think anything's gotten better since last week. I think there's a little. I don't know what the nuance of recommendation versus no recommendation, other than it still goes to the Senate floor. With or without a recommendation, in all my years here, there's frankly been almost zero weight put on that. Most committees never even study, oh, was this sent to us without recommendation or with recommendation? Because frankly, if the chair wants to bring it up, they bring it up. If the floor leader wants to bring it up, they bring it up. And with or without a recommendation, I would just urge members not to change how we voted the other day just because we changed one word in a motion that's going to the same place with the potential same outcome as what we voted on the other day. I don't think changing it to a no recommendation has any material change or effect of pushing this along or holding it here in this committee for a peaceful resting place. And so I would urge members to stay to vote the same way we did the other day, and or if you've now seen the bigger problems with the bill, vote no. And I think our small business child care owners and PCAs that we've heard from would thank you. And so I'd urge a no vote.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to add to what Senator Westrom was talking about. You know, I think not only are the members of the committee, but the public is wondering why we're here again, too, that we're having another redo, that this bill was defeated on a tie. And I'm sorry, I can't remember yesterday, the day before. It is all mixing together. But I think they're really wondering why we're here again and spending hours on this again when it was defeated on a tie several days ago. Don't fool yourself. This, even the way the very words that have been picked, that it would be reported without recommendation, don't fool yourself. This is just like voting yes for the bill, because it will still continue on the same track that Senator Westrom mentioned. It will be sent to the floor. It will be put on general orders, and I'm assuming that it's going to be heard on the floor. So what we did the other day and took a vote, a fair and square vote, was meaningless, because we have this in front of us again. And yes, motion has changed, but it is the same effect, and it will go to the floor just like it would have before. So this is just a word change in the motion to make this bill continue on its path. And so I just want this, we shouldn't be fooled. The public should not be fooled. We are moving this along, even though it was defeated several days ago.
Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We're obviously, spotlight
is on me, given I was one of the two no votes. And so what I want members to know is that I haven't changed where I stand on this bill and that I oppose the bill. I have told Senator Pappas that. I have told all those who have asked me. I oppose both sides of it, the PCA, and I oppose the child care. I do so because it isn't consistent with what the people in my community want. So I am not taking a walk. I am not changing my vote. Were this to come up on the Senate floor, I will be a red. I did out of was asked, would I allow it to go without recommendation? And I said that I would do that. And so make no mistake, I'm not changing where I stand on this bill and characterizing it as such, I think does is not, I mean, you can do whatever you want, obviously, but I have not changed where I stood on the bill. In addition, I do recall just last year, I don't know how it happened, I wasn't in the committees, but the right to work legislation came to the floor without recommendation, and I've seen many other things at one point or another. That's my recollection. No. Senator Fischbach is saying that's not correct. I do recall things coming without recommendation.
Okay, thank you. Senator Pappas' motion. Clerk will take the roll.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Westrom.
Well, Mr. Chair, I didn't know I didn't know what Senator Bonoff was going to say. Senator Bonoff, let me just encourage you. A no vote on the floor is going to have less effect than a no vote here today. And by changing to a yes, we put this bill in a position of being closer to the floor, closer to passage, and affecting your constituents that are going to, many, if not most of them, be very, very disappointed in what the legislature is doing to them. So I would strongly urge you to reconsider and know that if you do change that vote, it could mean the difference between this really passing or not passing. And we have a chance, if that's the case, to stand up for our small business providers that have been emailing us by the droves and let this idea kindle longer, because I don't think it's ready for showtime, Mr. Chair and Senator Bono.
Okay, well, if Senator Pappas' motion, I think we all know what a yes and a no means and so on. So let's not get too obscure. Senator Ingebrigtsen?
Very clearly, thank you, Mr. Chair. A motion to move, or an agreement to move this on to the floor, is basically not saying no. And for those hundreds and hundreds of people out there that have emailed us, and a few that are in favor of it, they need to know that this is moving forward. And this is, once again, kind of the theme of what's been going on here in the Senate this year. And there was a theme that was labeled on us 2 years ago, the do-nothing session. This is the do-over session, no question about it. And sooner or later, I think it's going to catch up to you folks. And either you agree with the bill or you don't. And the committee process is a place to weed things out. And this is a place that can be stopped if you actually don't agree with it. If you agree with it, to move it on, it's pretty feeble.
Okay. All right. We have Senator Pappas' motion in front of us. Senator Nino.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I promise closing comments. I don't have any amendments or anything like that. But I am going to take a play out of the chairman's playbook and tell stories of the old days. And I wasn't here at the time, but I've heard the story enough time from enough old timers, both legislators and lobbyists, that I believe it's a fairly accurate representation. And I think we might be seeing a similar, albeit slightly different, dynamic at play with this piece of legislation, is what I'm told happened back in the early mid-90s, I think, with the Marty campaign finance reform legislation. It was a hot topic at the time, and there were legitimately some reforms that needed to be done. I hear stories from some of the old timers about beer being poured in the rotunda and things that should not be going on that had been stopped. But there were a lot of significant flaws in that bill that many people now, and I've had conversations with some of you back in the retiring room, that the implication of that is that this legislature has become now less collegial. We're more divided, more partisan, because of some of the weaknesses and flaws in that legislation that now keep us apart.
we don't have the opportunity to get together as people like they did. But what happened is, I'm told, because it was a highly touted issue at the time, I can't remember if it came over to the Senate or if it went from the Senate to the House. I think it went from the Senate to the House. And nobody in the Senate was going to vote against it because the House wasn't going to take this piece of legislation. So I got sent over to the Senate, and they weren't going to fix it up because I think this is the way it played out. They weren't going to fix it up because it was John Marty, and he's a colleague, and went over and was going to go to the House and die. And maybe, Mr. Chair, you remember this. I don't know. And so went over to the House, and the House wasn't going to kill a bad bill because it would have been a bad vote for them. Besides, the governor's going to veto it, right? Well, the governor wasn't going to veto it and be the bad guy and take the fall. And we got some good things out of it, and we ended up with some negative implications as a result because nobody would step up and say, no, fix it before we do this. And now here we have this bill going, presumably, if the vote succeeds, going to the floor. Because, and if that happens, it's only because we're not going to have enough people to say, no, fix it before it goes there. You can't send a flawed piece of legislation to the floor and hope that it just flounders, because sometimes it becomes bad law.
Okay, we have Senator, thank you. We have Senator Pappas's motion in front of us. Clerk will take the roll. Chairman votes yes.
Anderson.
No.
Vonoff.
Yes.
Champion.
Yes.
Dibble.
Yes.
Fishbach.
No.
Goodwin.
No.
Ingebrigtsen.
No.
Latz.
Yes.
Limmer.
Nope.
Lori.
Yes.
Miller.
No.
Newman.
No.
Nino.
No.
Pappas.
Yes.
Peterson.
No.
Zaxog.
Yes.
Sieben.
Yes.
Stumpf.
Yes.
Tomasoni.
Yes.
Westrom.
No.
Uyghur.
Yes.
Again, a vote of 12 yes, 10 no. Motion is adopted, and that concludes the committee. We will meet probably members. We're doing the legacy work tomorrow in subcommittee. The full committee will probably meet because of